Hello everyone, welcome back to the Daily Putty Pick. I am your host, Liz Phillips, and welcome back. It's been a while since our last recording, which I want to say was almost a year ago. Still in quarantine, still in lockdown. I thought I'd dive right back into the fundamentals of all things pop culture and film, and I'd like you guys to come with me, so come on along. So, we left off in the last video basically talking about the lovely Academy Awards, which is kind of serendipitous timing when you think about it, because they've either just released or just about to release the current listing for the Academy Awards. Now, I will be open and honest and completely truthful with you. I have not been following along with any of the Academy because of just the overwhelming pressure of quarantine. So that's going to be the topic of my next podcast, is going to be basically the Academy Awards, the snubs, the highlights, the fact that there's a lot of films that are being nominated that are not typically being screened in theaters nationwide because of the lovely pandemic. Thank you, COVID. But, you know, I really don't see that as a really bad thing when you're really kind of looking at the overall aspect of the Academy Awards. So, let's dive right into something a little bit kind of connected to what we're going to be basically talking about in today's episode. Is going to be Marvel. Marvel, Marvel, Marvel. Now, I am a huge Marvel fan. I am really, really into Marvel. And one of the streaming services and kind of the highlights that came out of quarantine is the fact that we have Disney Plus. Now, I can't really remember right off the bat when Disney Plus was first established, or was it around when I first went into quarantine? I'm going to say no, but it was one of the major highlights that came out of quarantine lockdown. And I think it's something that we really do need to dive into just a wee bit. So, the highlight of my year so far, I'm just going to have to dive straight into WandaVision. So, if you have not watched WandaVision, or you have, and you're in the middle of it, and you haven't watched the entirety of the entire series, I'm going to stop you right now. This is probably not the episode for you. But the couple of things I want to speak about in this particular episode is WandaVision, and the start of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, representation of women in Marvel franchise, all that great lovely stuff. So we're gonna dive right in. It's gonna get kind of juicy. First off, I want to say, in the Marvel Universe, I am not really too well adept of the background information of Wanda and Vision. I was not introduced to these characters until I started watching the Avengers franchise, and where they were introduced in Age of Ultron, when we first met both Wanda and Vision, and learning the backstories of the comics and Legion M and the background of it compared to basically the film. You really have to kind of break it apart and stand alone as a standalone of its own. That's basically my motto. And now I will freely admit I am not well adept or very knowledgeable about comic books. And I wasn't really introduced into my love of Marvel until the first time I saw Iron Man. I think Robert Downey Jr.'s portrayal of Iron Man was the first introduction into the Marvel Universe that really kind of pulled me and probably a lot of other people in. So there's a lot of things to unpack when it comes to the demographic of where Marvel is focusing their attention. You know, do they want to please the base? Do they want to upset the base, you know, in the order of all things? Because you can get really, really walking a fine line when it comes to basically adapting or creating new universes, if it's going to adhere very quick or very closely to the comic book or the origins of the character. And it's the same thing with MCU as well. You really have to focus on the integrity of it. Does it pull away from the character? Does it pull away from the storyline? Does it break away from the original intent of the creator? You know, all of that lovely information is really kind of all-encompassing and all-important when you're talking about Marvel or anything to do with the fan base. But we'll get to all that information later. So let's just dive right into Wanda, shall we? So I wasn't introduced to Wanda's character, and I'm going to butcher her last name, but she's played by Elizabeth Olsen, which is also an Olsen twin from, yes, Full House. If you would have, I mean, it still took me a really, really long time to understand that she was related to the twins from Full House. It just kind of blows my mind. But Wanda was introduced basically, the WandaVision series was basically introduced in 2021. Basically, the first episode air date was January 15th, 2021. I will be the first to say that I was not super thrilled about it, and I really didn't see a large following with it. We already had a lot of backlash, or I should say Brie Larson had some backlash from her first portrayal of Captain Marvel when it came out. There's still, I feel, and I really still do feel as though there was a lot of apprehension from the studios of backing WandaVision. But once the success of Captain Marvel came out and the fact that a solo female character can drive a comic-based movie with her being a strong leading solo character, and the fact that it wouldn't break a franchise and it would still pull in their demographic base, that I think that really kind of opened up the pathway for WandaVision to be successful. Now, that being said, WandaVision and Scarlet, and the Scarlet Witch, same person, Scarlett Johansson's character in Black Widow, there was clamorings for a Black Widow background, like her origin story, for a very long time. She was introduced in the sequel to Iron Man and Iron Man 2. Pretty positive I'm getting this right. It was the first time that I remember her personally thinking to myself, hey, that's a really strong female lead in the Marvel Universe, because it's usually the Incredible Hulk, there's Thor, there's Iron Man, there's all these other characters that are so predominantly men, that to see a strong female lead, and then to even hear about Scarlett Johansson's backstory of preparing for that role and the diet she had to stick to and the weight loss and all these other questions that she was getting in interviews that were more specifically gender-based questions that were not being asked of her male counterparts. It was like a big deal. It was a big deal. And so once her story started to be more developed and then she was established more as a base character in the Avengers franchise, and the fact that she was a major part in that franchise, that things started to open. And I had a discussion with a friend of mine in which he was asking me, why was it so more acceptable for Elizabeth Olsen's portrayal of WandaVision when Brie Larson's character got such panned for Captain Marvel? But you really have to look even farther back than that and look at Scarlett Johansson's, you know, Black Widow character, and the fact that she really was, in my personal opinion, the first female breakout role in the Marvel Universe. Did she get a backstory? No. Well, I mean, she has now, but was hers the first female backstory to be developed? No. I think part of that did play in the fact that they were kind of lining up the storylines of how things were going to play in the expansion and the progression of the Marvel Universe and how it'll be interconnected between each movie franchise. By the way, side note, if you're going to watch the Marvel films, please watch them in chronological order of timeline and not release. It'll make much more sense in a lineal line, basically, and how each character is interconnected with the other. But I digress. When you're really thinking about it, I feel as though Scarlett Johansson's portrayal of the Black Widow was the first time you really saw a strong female lead. But did she get the opportunity to be a solo character in her own standalone breakoff movie? No, not yet. But, at the time that they were establishing Captain Marvel's character, they were already fighting for representation of her backstory, which I find and love and am super excited about. But then we have WandaVision comes out. So going into WandaVision, you really do have to focus on the female representation that came before her. But the fact that her coming from a smaller role, I felt, as a supporting character on the villain side in Age of Ultron, and then coming and becoming a well-developed, established character, and then gaining romance with Vision, and really building these personal, interconnected relationships with other members of the team, and still keeping her character dynamic, really did play well once they gave her her own show. And I will be the first to say, and this is a spoiler alert if you have not watched the series WandaVision, I was apprehensive. I was very apprehensive to watch the series because of the fact that I did not really feel very connected to her character, because she wasn't one of the base at the beginning of the film. I did feel like they developed her story enough to give her a standalone series, which was really a structure built to introduce her character and her backstory more into the Doctor Strange sequel, which is going to be coming out, in which Elizabeth Olsen will be having a major part with Wanda's character. But it's going to be, from what I'm reading and understanding, more of a development of the Scarlet Witch character, which you then find out and which is developed basically over the course of the WandaVision series. So let's dive into that, shall we? So WandaVision first starts off with episode one, where Vision is introduced in a Dick Van Dyke-like series that's very modeled after Dick Van Dyke. It is a black and white series. The set is very similar and built in the same structure and composition as basically Dick Van Dyke show. It leaves you wondering. It's what we call in teacher talk, it's called a hook. In movie talk, it's the same thing. But you hook the audience in by the question. You don't give a lot of detail about the meaning behind why that's being done, other than the fact that, hey, I'm hooking you in by curiosity. So you watch the first couple of movies, or first couple episodes of WandaVision, and you're completely perplexed. Each episode is an advancement of the other one. So the first episode is basically something very similar to Dick Van Dyke, and then it merges into Bewitched. And then the sequels or the intro songs are even very mirrored to certain things, and then you develop certain Easter eggs in each episode. So if you're frustrated at watching WandaVision, give it at least to the fourth episode before you actually get into the why aspect of it. I think they should have dove in a little bit more into at the end of episode two, but at the end of episode three, you're going to get a little bit more development of why is this happening? I don't understand why we're watching old television shows. But some of the beautiful aspects of it was the fact that if you're a very big fan of older cinema and older television shows like The Munsters and Bewitched and I Love Jeannie and all these other great Dick Van Dyke, looking at these shows and finding the Easter eggs and how to connect them to the storyline is fascinating and fun, but man, can be super frustrating. The fan theories for WandaVision were just so great. And the fan theories alone really is what introduced me into more of the backstory of Mephisto and all these other characters that you're thinking were going to be like, oh, who's the bad guy? Who's the villain? Where is it going to come? Is it this person? Is it that person? And the symbolism, watch for visual keys and symbolism, especially in the commercials. The commercials that play between the episodes or during the breaks of the episodes, it's a very telltale sign of a lot of the background stuff. So the lovely thing about WandaVision is every single time you watch it, I really do feel like every episode you're going to learn more and more every time you watch it. And that's kind of the beauty of the beginning of it. But it really did, I feel, can drive some people away if you're anticipating the beginning or to have that action-filled drama that you get in a Marvel movie all the way through. Because it's really not based on that. It's really kind of a deep thinker. And it really does make you wonder why. And if you haven't seen the show, I'm just saying, now's the time to press pause. But the development of the side characters as well, and introducing the two children and Wanda having two children, which she manifests herself, and then trying to figure out if Vision is really alive or is he dead, and the whole background theory of that, and how this whole series ended, and like the introduction of basically S.H.I.E.L.D. aspect of it coming into play, and it's just very well written. And I have to say, I have never fallen more in love with Elizabeth Olsen than I have in the series. And I will say part of it is because they dropped the accent that she has in the movies, because since she is technically in her own world that she created herself in the WandaVision series, you're kind of left wondering, like, where'd her accent go? Like, was it there for a reason? Did they drop it because the fact that they felt as though it wasn't important, or the fact that they really did want to break this wall, or not break it, really kind of build it? Because you do find in the actual series, she builds literally a gigantic wall around this town and creates this whole town out of grief for her lost for Vision. And the love that she had, sorry for the sirens, but the love that she had for him, and how that connects her to her grief, and how we process death and grief. I mean, I'm still processing the death from the last Endgame movie. And, you know, just the dusting of everybody in the movie before that. It was really difficult for me to get past that. I still see TikTok videos of the whole thing. I go down this really crazy rabbit hole of TikTok and Marvel, and it just replays it on a loop, and I still just get emotionally. Let's not go there. So, the overall arc of WandaVision's television series and the development of her connection and the writing on the show is just so strong. You can't help but get so emotionally invested in the show. And Paul Bettany is just, I mean, he's just the loveliest man ever. I've followed his career ever since the beginning when he was in A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger. And the first time he was introduced in that movie, when he didn't have a stitch of clothing on, and his humor in a large majority of the films that he has. But he's also very good at dramatic roles as well. So I really do feel that WandaVision was a very good platform for him to show his vulnerability and his anger and his love and humor. Like, the sense of humor that he carried throughout the series was very, very, very impressive. And having to shift so far back and forth between the two really did, you know, just blow my mind. But I will say that the breakout star of this entire series definitely has to be Agatha. I've always loved her. I mean, I've always loved Catherine Hahn and everything I've ever seen her in. Like, and she's had these really small parts, and she's had bigger roles, and then she's had bigger roles. But this one really was a breakout for her. Like, really was. And I will say, I didn't see... Oh, and I know a lot of people probably saw it coming, but I did not see it coming. I really didn't. And I also really loved, oh my gosh, Monica Rambeau. Her character was amazing. And as Tatiana Paris. I've seen her in a couple of other things that she's done previously in the past. Dear White People, Sharok, If Bill Street Could Talk. I mean, she's got a very impressive resume. She really does. But I really, really loved her character, because I really wasn't sure if I was going to be emotionally invested in the fact that this was Monica Rambeau. You know, that her mother had gone, and that she was here, and that she was going to be turning into another, basically, character later on, because she's going to have, basically, there's talks, from what I understand, is she's going to have her own spinoff show, which she rightfully deserves, because she was amazing in WandaVision. But basically, the premise of the entire series is the fact that Wanda is so stricken with grief over the loss of Vision during the fight versus Thanos that she cannot process her grief, and that her grief manifests out into a gigantic force field around this town. She finds out that Vision had purchased her a home where they were supposed to live their lives together. And then he happens to pass away due to really horrible tragedy, and the fact that Wanda had to watch him die twice, you know, be murdered twice. She literally just, it was really, really hard for her to process. So she manifests this humongous force field around an entire town where it envelops the psyche and consciousness of everybody. And she's ruling and controlling everybody in the town, and she doesn't understand how she's doing it. And so it really does take a lot of self-discovery. But I will tell you, like, the introduction to other minor characters that came in and just blew everybody away. Randall Park character playing Jimmy Woo. I hope that they give him and Kat Dennings, who plays Darcy Lewis, a spin-off show very similar to The X-Files. Like, their chemistry together and humor is just, like, you can't beat it. You really can't beat it. But, I mean, all the other development of the town people in the town that she ends up taking, you end up getting really invested in a lot of other members in the cast. And the two little boys that played her sons, I mean, I myself, Asif Ali, who plays Norm, I mean, he is just genuinely, I don't know if you follow him on TikTok or social media, but he is an amazingly funny human being. Just amazing. The casting for this project could have not been better, like, honestly. But the episodes basically develop the story of the fact that Wanda has to come to terms with her grief. And Monica Rambeau plays a big part in that, along with other people. You then find out that Agatha ends up being this whole totally completely different person. Sorry, not Agatha, Agnes. I don't know why I'm stuck on Agatha. But Agnes ends up being this quirky neighbor that's always there. And you're wondering, like, why is this person always here? Like, she's coming over. And then Wanda ends up hiding a lot of her powers and keeping them just between her and Vision. And then as the storyline develops, she ends up losing pretty much control of the town because of the pressure and the fact that outside sources, Director Tyler is coming in to try to gain control because of the fact that they think that she took Vision from the facility and has them in there. And then you start thinking to yourself, okay, is he Mephisto? Did Mephisto get, you know, into him, and is he control? And then you find out that Agnes, I don't know why I keep saying Agatha. Agnes is the one that's really been controlling everything. It's been Agnes all along. It just kind of drives you a little bonkers. I will say that the one downfall I found out of the entire series is the fact that I thought that the conflict between her and Agnes was really kind of anticlimactic. But I think part of that had to be along with the part that I was anticipating through all these fan theories of all these ways it could be interconnected outside of Wanda's bubble to other characters to move the storyline along, that when Agnes came in and she was the villain and it was happened to be another witch, and it was another witch that I really didn't know anything about, I really thought to myself, this is super anticlimactic. I thought it was going to be something bigger, especially at the fact that after she fought Thanos, and it has been, like, verified from the director of the Avengers franchise that the one character that could beat Thanos was was Scarlet Witch, Wanda. Like, Wanda's the one that could do it. She almost did it. If Thanos hadn't called for basically a complete fire drop of everything and risked the fact of losing all just to save his own life during the last film, Wanda would have killed him. Wanda would have easily taken him out. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You know, do a little dusting off, and then, you know, because of her anger and her hurt and her pain from the loss of her brother. I mean, don't even get me started on the fact that they brought in Evan Peters. I mean, I about lost my damn mind when that happened, because I always really loved his representation of Quicksilver in the MCU, or not the MCU, in X-Men. I mean, I loved it. And the fact that they had him come on as a cameo part. And I still think one of the theories was the fact that they were introducing a connection between the X-Men and the Marvel Universe. And that was one of the reasons why Evan Peters' character was brought in. That's what the theory was. I was so down with that. And then to find out that he's some rando dude that's locked in a basement at the very end of the... You just have to watch it to really get it. But this is definitely a series you're going to have to watch multiple times to really get into. You're really just going to have to like dig a little deeper into it. So when this came out, it was honestly, I felt a replacement for The Mandalorian. And The Mandalorian is a whole nother series that we could talk about at some other time. But I'm just going to leave that there. But Mandalorian season was over and I was really needing a fix. And I was like, I really need something to look forward to on a weekly basis. So every Friday was WandaVision. And I was super excited about it. And then next thing you know, WandaVision's over. And then you're left with this hole again, because you're like, I feel like something's missing, like the excitement and what's going to happen, the development of the story and what's going to be connected, like what's going to happen. And then to find out that there was no original plans to do a second series, to do a second season, broke my heart. I'm not going to lie. It broke my heart. I immediately went to Facebook, needed to be consoled by my friends. Yes, I understand that it was really kind of a primary project to develop the introduction of the Scarlet Witch into, you know, the multiverse and to bring Scarlet Witch in. I mean, that's the cliffhanger ending at the end. Where is Wanda at the end of the series, right? If you're watching any kind of post-credits and anything after that, where is Wanda at the end? She's in a house that looks almost identical to the house in that beautiful meadow that Thanos was in when he was contemplating his future and kind of feeling the loneliness of having completed his basically everything he sought out to do, right? And then after that, what ends up happening? What do you do now? Well, it doesn't happen that way. You find out that not only can she basically split herself in her spiritual plane to do all this research, because now she has access to the book. And there was a really cool little Easter egg that a friend pointed out to me, that the book that she had, that Agnes had, that she is now researching, is supposedly something that's very dark. And that's what Agnes was referencing to, is that you're the Scarlet Witch. And of course, Wanda doesn't want to have anything to do with it because she's on a road to redemption. She had been through a lot of pain in her life. She's done a lot of bad things. She wanted to redeem herself. And that's the whole choice that she made at the end of the series, where she sacrifices her happiness with the love of her life and the children that she had manifested, even though that wasn't how it played out in the comic books. I really like that they diverted from that. But the fact that she sacrificed her own happiness. All she wanted was their family. That was it. She would have been fine just being in her own bubble for the rest of her life with the Vision and her kids, even if they weren't real or they were real. I have a theory of my own when it comes to the Vision Stone. Or the Mind Stone that Vision had implanted in his head She was there when the stone was broken and when all the energy and power was released. Part of Vision, I felt, was captured inside of her, and that's what gave her the capability of creating a version of Vision in the series. I digress. So, her road to redemption feels somewhat off-putting when she's now got this book at the end, and she's got this opportunity to do something positive, and yet her grief and the sheer determination, because she hears her child's voice at the end of the series. Once those children, the scene where she has to tuck her boys into bed and she turns to them and she thanks them for picking her to be their mom. It made me question a little bit. Like, what does she mean by them picking her? Right? But just the grief as a parent that she knows that it's coming and that the boy, one of the boys who's got a psychic ability of some kind, he knows what's coming. I mean, just the grief of it all, you know, the Vision knows what's coming, and all it's coming at you like an atom bomb. Like, there's just this wave, you know, and then it ends. And then you've got this post-credit scene where she's in this cabin in the woods and she's studying this book because, you know, she's going to have to go into some type of multiverse to find either Vision or her children. We don't know. We won't know until Doctor Strange sequel comes out. And the waiting for that is like slowly killing me. But I just can't express how well written the series is and how well it's acted. And the cast is amazing. There's not one weak link in that cast. I'm telling you, just get past the first 2.5 episodes and you will not regret it. And go back and watch the first 2 episodes and you will appreciate it that much more. But the one thing that I'm left questioning was White Vision. And I know that's not his name. I don't remember what the title that they gave his character. They gave a sentient being that looks exactly like Vision without color. They introduce him to bring him in to fight Vision, to capture him or kill him. I'm not too sure. That's a little unclear for me about the intent. But Vision ends up discussing analytically with him the thought process of why. Why are you here? Why are we both here? And so he knows himself because he's fighting himself. So he basically says, read me. Like, everything that I have, you should have. So he gives his memories, which are the memories of Wanda, taken from Vision, gives them to this new Vision. And he just stops mid-fight and goes, I am Vision, shoots up through the ceiling and is gone, never to be seen again. And I'm like, what type of Vision is he? Which period of Vision is he? Is he the brand new Vision? Does he have all of the memories that was established between him and Wanda and the love they shared? Because at the exact same time, Wanda is fighting Agnes and trying to protect her children. Why? I mean, the Vision came back, but why didn't the new Vision go back to protect Wanda? Where did he go? You never find out. So I know that's going to be addressed. At least I'm hoping it does. Is that going to be the new Vision? Because the old Vision is no longer around, but now the new Vision has Vision's memories and is new the new Vision, or a new adapted version of it. I don't know. Just the logistical part of it kind of drives me crazy and up the wall. But now that WandaVision is done, and now we know that there is not going to be another series, even though I do, and I'm saying this now, I have a theory that even though they're saying, and I'm saying air quotes right now, that they're not going to be doing another WandaVision, that after the success of Doctor Strange, the sequel to Doctor Strange, I have a feeling they would probably do another. There's going to be too much of a demand to bring it back. It was just that good. But then I have this period of time where you're reflecting on things because that's what you should do. And you reflect on it. And you kind of like marinate in it. And you're just kind of like, okay, how do I really feel about this? And it just makes me miss it even more. And it makes me more impatient. But then we get Falcon and the Winter Soldier shortly afterwards. I think Marvel was feeling bad for us, that they knew that they had to line a bunch of stuff up. And I mean, they have got, I don't know if you've seen it, but they have got a lineup of stuff that's going to be coming out soon for Marvel. And it just boggles my mind. And it just makes me so happy that after Endgame, there's still a future in Marvel, because the permanence of it really did make me feel somewhat really, really sad. And I was like, I don't understand. Is there going to be more? What's going to happen? But basically, the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now has got out Falcon and the Winter Soldier, where it basically picks up the helm of the continuation between Bucky and Sam after Captain America lays down his shield. So if you remember at the end of Endgame, and this is a weird, wicked time loop controversy paradox that me and some other friends got in a discussion about, but when you're really kind of focusing on it, is it a multiverse? Is it an alternate timeline? Like the fact that he goes and lives his entire life, is it something along the same line that will be a constant loop? We can go about that like literally all day, but there really is, so far, I find, a lot of potential in this show. Now, there's tons of movies coming out. There's the new Captain Marvel. There's the new Black Panther, Thor Love and Thunder. Even though I am not a Natalie Portman fan and I'm not super psyched about it, I'm going to watch it, because my theory is you really can't talk crap about a film if you have not seen it. So I will watch it. Doctor Strange is going to be coming out. A new Spider-Man, which I'm super psyched about. I would like to know what you guys think. Do you think it's going to be a multiverse? Do you think Tobey Maguire is going to come on? Like, I don't know. Because when you're looking at, if you go to the MDB page, IMDB page for Doctor Strange, and you look at the cast of that movie, it literally blows my mind, like, how many people are in it. So you're thinking, they have to be multiverses. Like, you have to. I mean, there's the Eternals, Shang-Chi and the Legend. There's Black Widow, Spider-Man Far From Home. Oh, that's a refund. Sorry, Far From Home is already something that's come and gone. But I mean, just going in and looking at the new Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange and the multiverse of madness. Right? If you're looking at the IMDb page for that, I cannot say that. I do not know why I'm struggling so hard. But honestly, if you just look at the new Doctor Strange and the casting for that and who's in it, it's jam-packed full of cast members, and there're just so many of them. So it's coming out in 2022, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. The IMDb page for this is just chock full of just like mind-boggling cast members. Elizabeth Olsen, Rachel McAdams is coming back, Benedict Cumberbatch is going to be there. We've got I never say his name right. I'm so sorry, I'm going to butcher your name. But Mordor's coming back. He's an English actor, writer, and director. Chiwetel Ejiofor, very, very amazing actor. He's going to be back. Then we have Wong's coming back, Benedict Wong. I had no idea they had the same name. Benedict Wong is coming back. I mean, it's the full cast just kind of blows my mind, like legit blows my mind. The IMDb, I'm sorry, I'm looking up the IMDb page. It's kind of been altered since last time I saw it. Maybe they're trying to keep a secret, I don't know. But I know there's going to be multiverse stuff there that's going to happen. I do have a very strong feeling that they're going to be going into maybe some Andrew Garfield territory or some Tobey Maguire territory for Spider-Man. I have this feeling. But the lineup that they have for the movies that are coming out for Marvel Cinematic Universe is just jam-packed full of just stuff I want to watch. So when I heard especially at the end of Endgame, when I was, you know, you walk out and then like they're out in this beautiful area and they've got the transporter all set up and he's going to go back and, you know, replace the stones exactly where they were taken, so it's not going to mess up the timeline at all. And you're looking at Captain America and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, he'll be back. My naivety of it all. And he doesn't come back. And then there's an old man sitting on a bench. And then, of course, I hear the rumor about Stan that was supposed to be the cameo for Stan Lee. And it just makes me, like, break down thinking about it. But, I mean, if Chris Evans is going to look like that when he's older, I don't think he has anything to worry about. But the fact that he gave the helm to Sam, and he's like, hey, here's the helm, Sam, that you're to take it up, and that he can't take it because of the, you know, because of whatever reason. And you really kind of get into it a little bit more when you get into the second episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But I mean, just the development of everyday trials and tribulations of people of color and certain things going on in just society as parallel to things that are happening now, I think it's really well written. And then the post-traumatic stress disorder that Bucky's character is having to deal with, you know, really does run a really big parallel to certain things that are happening in our lifetime now that I really do feel people can really attach themselves to and really just kind of take that in and appreciate that maybe it couldn't have been done before. I mean it could, but I mean, not just the quality of cinematography and the shooting quality that they're using for like WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's really impressive the amount of money that's being put into this television series to make it successful. It's super impressive and I'm super excited about it. Yeah, I'm super excited about it. So I've only seen the first couple episodes of it, but so far it's really, really good. It's strong. The writing's strong. The writing, the acting is strong. The cast is very strong. I'm going to say Falcon was a character that I didn't really feel was well established very well in the Avengers series. So I didn't really feel a connection to him. Like, and I don't know why, I just kind of thought, you know, there was something about Anthony that I was hesitant to get on board with, because I think maybe they didn't give him enough storyline that I felt his character, I guess, needed. I don't really know, but I really do think he's doing an awesome and amazing job, but Anthony Mackie is really growing on me. Like, I really am starting to like his character. I think some of the arrogance of his character, that's the thing, is it wasn't really even arrogant. The self-confidence that he had. Not Anthony Mackie playing him, but his character as Sam. He's got a little bit of, you know, an ego. But I think that really does play well in the Marvel Universe. I mean, shoot, look at Tony Stark. He's all ego. All ego, and he can back it up. And I think that's maybe where I was hesitant. It's like he's got a lot of ego and a lot of confidence. Not so much ego, more confidence. I don't know if he can back it up. And so I was waiting for that development to come through, and it really didn't really come through in the movies as much as I really wanted it to, which is fine. And, you know, it's fine. And so I really do feel that this is a very good platform for both characters to get more development. Because then we look at Bucky, and Bucky does have a more established role because he has more background. And he was established in, you know, the very first lineup movie, Captain Marvel. And then you lose him, and then you feel like he's lost. And then he comes back as a Winter Soldier. And then he does the whole bad guy thing. And now he's at a point in his life where he wants to leave that behind as his character in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So Bucky is really kind of trying to redeem himself as and establish himself as a somewhat more of character. He's trying to redeem himself. He's trying to be a redeemable character, which I always felt like he was, because he was always good to begin with and had a good heart. and for him to go bad. You can't help but think he could return to that goodness that he once had, because it's always been there. It's down deep inside, right? So basically it starts off post send off. So they, you know, Captain America has given Sam the shield, and Sam can't take up the helm because he doesn't feel as though he can do it. And at the end of Endgame, you're left thinking to yourself, is he going to be Captain America? And I'll be flat out honest with you, I did not want him to be Captain America, because I didn't want anybody to be Captain America. I didn't think anybody should take the helm after Chris Evans left. I was like, no, there's only one Captain America. It can't be anybody else. And especially when you come into play with lovely Wyatt Russell. And I'll tell you, he's a really nice guy. He does a lot of charity work, but for some reason, you can't help but hate him a little bit because of the fact that he's filling the shoes of Chris Evans, Captain America. And then you hear these little stories about the fact that supposedly, and I don't know if this is true, that Wyatt Russell had requested that he can use the actual suit that Chris Evans wore in Captain America. In all the Avengers movies, it just makes you feel like he's stomping all over Captain America. And then he comes out, and, you know, it's supposed to be this big shock, you know, that here you have this character, you have Sam, and they're trying to do the right thing. And Sam's not getting paid what he should be paid. So he's going through a hardship because he's trying to get alone with his sister. I think it's his sister. And they're trying to just basically live, and they can't. You know, they're losing the family farm. They're losing literally everything that was near and dear to them. And they're reaching out for help, and there's nobody to help them. And here's Sam, you know, this person that has given his life for the world, not just for his country, for the entire world and the entire universe, right? He's a part of the Avengers that saved the world from Thanos. And he can't even get a freaking loan? Are you kidding me? It's the working class struggle, you know, of you know, people of color. And it's really obvious, the struggles that he has to go through. And I think that's purposely done with the writing. I think they meant to do that, to hit you in the face and go, there are these peoples that are struggling. They're heroes, but they struggle, you know. Then we have Bucky, who's doing this like 12-step program. It's kind of like a recovery program, and part of that is to amend or get, you know, acceptance for his wrongdoings. And so he's having a really hard time with post-traumatic stress and some of the bad things he did when he was a Winter Soldier, and he's been struggling with that. And so they're doing a really lovely job developing these amazing characters. And even the side characters are really strong. But then here comes Wyatt Russell as the new Captain America, because Sam wouldn't take up the helm. And so, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this, you should have said this sooner, you might want to turn this off or pause it. But here comes Sam. He takes the sword, but he refuses to take it. Then Bucky is really angry with Sam because he refuses to take up the helm. Now here's the tricky part. The reason why they're fighting, and they don't really understand each other because they're not communicating. So there's this one lovely scene between Bucky and his therapist. He had been arrested because he wasn't going to his court-ordered therapy. And so he has to have this impromptu therapy session, and Sam gets dragged into it. So they're asked to face to face to each other, really close in chairs, very uncomfortably so. It was hilarious. And basically be honest with each other. And then finally Bucky turns to Sam and goes, why didn't you take it? And Sam just goes, I can't take it. It wasn't mine to take. And then Bucky just lets it out. And he's like, listen, the reason why I'm so upset is because you didn't take it. And he trusted you, and you turned him down. So does that mean that he was wrong about you. Because if he was wrong about you, Sam, he was wrong about me. So the internal struggle that he's basically having is manifesting with his relationships outside of himself with other people. So, and that kind of manifests and really is kind of displaced on Sam's relationship with him. So it's like a breakthrough moment. And then they're also bonding over the fact that they hate the new Captain America. So since Sam donated the shield, you know, to be protected because it's made of vibranium, which is the strongest metal ever to be created, you know, it's sad and sweet, and you kind of understand why, where Sam's coming from. At least you think you do. You know, there's a reason why there hasn't been an African American or a person of color as Captain America. You find out throughout the course of the series that there actually has been with Isaiah. They introduce Isaiah, and then you find out that he was made into a super soldier just like Bucky and just like, you know, Captain America. But what happened to him? You know, he was imprisoned. I think it was for 30 years for most of his life. You know, he was denied the rights that he was due, and he was persecuted because of the color of his skin. And that's one of the reasons why Sam doesn't want to take up the helm. I have a theory that he is going to eventually have to take it up for some reason. For some reason, Wyatt Russell's character or portrayal of Captain America is just aggravating. And that's the thing, is I honestly think part of this is purposely done as a marketing or advertising ploy to make you hate his character. Because one, we already dislike his character anyways because he's trying to replace Captain America. He can sit there and try to say that he's not, but I think part of it has to do with the fact that, here's my hypothesis. I've only watched a couple of episodes, but this is where I think it's going. I think since the new Captain America is technically not a super soldier, but now that they've introduced super soldiers, other ones out, there's now the possibility of getting the serum to turn into a super soldier. I think if that possibility comes across the new Captain America or Walker's character, who's played by Wyatt Russell, I think he's going to take it. I think they're establishing him to be the not an anti-hero, but I think that they're establishing him to be part of the villain. I wouldn't be surprised if he's behind it. I mean, it's this big conspiracy, and the people that backed, you know, originally Captain Marvel did not do it with good intentions. At least I don't think so. It just so happened that they picked the right person, that the doctor picked the right person for it to go to. But it totally, I mean, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So if that power gets into the wrong hands, you know what I'm saying? You're screwed. Yeah, but I mean, honestly, so far, I'm really, really digging it. I'm loving the way things are going. I'm super excited about the new films and the new series that are going to be coming out and the development of other characters. I mean, looking at this and comparing it to Zack Snyder and the MCU and the flaws in the MCU universe going on right now. I mean, the you know, MCU universe, basically. I really find that Marvel has really found its niche. I mean, they had some struggles in the beginning with a couple of the Hulk franchises. I really do feel as though they should do another Hulk film with Mark Ruffalo, because I love his character and I really feel like it deserves its own story. I don't think it'll ever happen. Because of the fact that they've struggled so much with getting a successful Hulk. But I really do find like they found a really good actor to play him, that if it was just the right storyline, it could be successful. But there's just so much good stuff on the plate right now. I think it's really far down the road if it's ever going to happen. But I'm really excited to see what Marvel's putting out. And I will say this, I'm not the biggest MCU fan, but I did sit through and I did watch all 4 hours of the Zack Snyder shut, the director's cut. And I at no point in time felt, is this movie over? Yeah. All I've got to say is that I just really, really loved it. And I really do feel you guys will love it too. So definitely, definitely watch WandaVision. Definitely start watching Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And you know what? I'm going to say this with all confidence. If you have 4 hours to spare, definitely go back and watch the Zack Snyder cut of the MCU Justice League, because it was really freaking good. Like, it was so good that, like, I didn't even want to rewatch the old one to compare it with the new one, because I didn't remember almost a single thing from the original movie. I'm not really the biggest Josh Whedon fan at this moment, after learning more about his backstory and stuff, but that's like for another day. We could talk about that another day. But thank you so much for listening, guys. I know not a lot of you guys are watching this or listening to this right now, but for the one or two people that have, I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back. I know I said in the last podcast that I would be starting the Lost series, but I ended up getting sucked into the West Wing, which I am 5th season into right now. So I'm hoping to do a future review of West Wing in the future. So hopefully after I complete that one, I'll dive into the Lost franchise. But man, I'm telling you, I watched the end of Lost and I already know the ending to it. So that's got me a little bit apprehensive, but I'm going to shoot for it and wing it anyways. And we'll kind of dive into it together. So thank you so much for listening, guys. Have a great week. It is spring break for me starting today. I plan to sleep for the next week. It's going to be fabulous. But love you all. I will talk to you guys later. Have a great day, everyone. Bye.